Red Fell Bashouti.
Red Fell Bashouti. We are excited to announce our new sponsorship from the country of Qatar. Like all of America First, we are giving up and registering with Farah and rebanding. Welcome to Red Fell Bashouti podcast.
Almost had it.
Oh, I think that was pretty good. That was pretty good.
Bashouri? Wasn't that Red Fell Bashouri?
I think it was Bashouri.
I can't roll the thing.
We're still working on pronunciations. I just want to note how quickly we've gone from being sponsored by the Daily Wire to being sponsored by the nation of Qatar. It's quite a 180 for us, but you know what? We got to do what we got to do to make a buck. That's always been our MO, is just profit over all things. So
that's why we do this.
We have to make Qatar great again.
That's right. But before we do, we have a very special announcement. David Rand has turned 40 years old. Big 4-0.
Yes, sir.
Big 4-0.
Yes,
and yeah. we have a very special little treat for him. Some champagne. We brought mimosas. We brought pastries.
What's going on here?
And a little show. Check it out.
Happy birthday, Mr. Clayton.
Happy birthday, Uncle David.
David, happy birthday. 4-0, baby, let's go.
Hey, Dave, happy 40th, bro.
David, happy birthday, my brother. Happy 40th. As an avid subscriber to Human Reaction, I'm reacting to this major day for you. So happy 40th birthday, man. Enjoy.
Happy 40. Big one. Tempted to make a bunch of AARP jokes and depends and colonoscopies, all that stuff. But I'm a year ahead of you, so it doesn't do me any good.
Happy birthday.
Happy birthday.
Happy birthday, bro. I don't know very many cool people in the world, but you're one of them.
Happy birthday, Mr. David.
Happy birthday, honey. I love you so much.
David Rand, happy 40th, my friend. It is an honor and a pleasure to share the mics with you every week. Hopefully some of your immense amount of knowledge has somehow made its way into my brain over these many episodes, and here's to many more.
What up, David? Happy 40th birthday. Sorry I'm not there right now, but currently setting up our X Overland Expo in Arizona. But happy birthday, buddy. Appreciate you. Have a good one.
Happy birthday, David, from your favorite Canadian.
That was so awesome. Thank you.
Despite all my efforts, I couldn't get Kyle to send me a video. I texted you 1,000 times.
I lost my phone.
He lost his phone.
We were just talking about it before you came in. Were you trying to get out?
I was like, Kyle, are you dead? I need a video for David's birthday. So I had to make you
a generic Canadian myself.
So I had to make you a Terrence and Phillip.
Happy birthday, David, for your favorite Canadian.
That's hilarious. We were just talking about it before you came in that I lost my phone.
That's amazing. Well, I'm glad you weren't just a terrible friend. That's a much better story.
That's funny.
Oh, man.
Anyway.
Oh, thanks,
happy
Joe.
Birthday, buddy. Appreciate it's a pleasure. That, it's a pleasure. Everybody, please sound off in the comments. Tell David happy birthday. Big 4-0. Get into the Discord. Give him some shit. We would love to have you in there.
Actually, speaking of the Discord, we had a gift come in.
We did. Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Yeah, speaking of birthdays, David, why don't you open this up?
Okay.
Tell us about it.
It's not meant to be a birthday present, but
yeah, it was just to the show.
Our buddy in the Discord, JRC, sent out a... I'm making sure that I'm not showing his address.
Block any. We're trying not to dox you, buddy.
Whoa, look at that. It's a light box.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
Does it have a switch on the back?
Yeah. Let me set it up.
So we got this light box here. He cut out, it looks like 3D printed, and cut out the HR logo, and this thing lights up from the inside. We're going to get this thing lit up. It's going to be a feature on our set from here into forever.
Oh, yeah. He sent such a sweet message, too. The guy.
Absolutely. You got to read that while we... Here, give me that, and I'll set it up, and okay, you can read the...
I should, like, try to figure out how to, like, jerry-rig that in your shot.
Yeah. All right. Let me bring that. So he said, I want to express my sincere gratitude for the podcast has provided. As a token of my appreciated design and 3D printed a light box featuring your podcast logo, this is my very first light box creation. I am thrilled to share it with you. Thank you for all the incredible work you do and cutting through the media misdirection.
Whoa. Here we go. 3, 2, 1.
Yeah. Oh, cool. Dude, you got so the color cool. Even? That's all awesome.
That is sick. All right. We got to find a place to put this. A place of prominence.
It's like the perfect yellow, too.
Yeah. It really is. He nailed it. Nice. Well, I'm just gonna
attach it to that.
I'm just gonna put it right there.
Yeah, I feel like after we got to figure out how to like jerry rig it to
mount it to the wall,
like
maybe?
Behind an ear shot or something.
Yeah, yes, we will find a place of prominence to mount that. Thanks so much, Jerry. See, that's such a cool gift. And if anybody else wants their own cool light box, you know, you should join our Discord. Hit up JRC. Could be a cool business idea, my guy. Let's make it happen.
There we go. Making money.
All right. Let's get into the show. What do you say?
Oh, we got to pour these mimosas.
Oh, that's right. We got to pour some champagne.
No.
Sorry, Bennett. Just kidding. I'm bleeding this episode.
That's so funny.
All right. Into the show.
All right.
To talk all about our new sponsors and friends, Qatar.
Qatar. Thank you, Karen, for the pronunciation. Make sure we got it right.
Qatar.
Oh, yeah. And don't forget, comments.
Yeah, yeah.
Comments.
That's a thing.
Yes. Do the comment.
Tell us, would you rather we be sponsored by Qatar or the Daily Wire?
Both seem like bad outcomes. Either way, you're sponsored by Israel. Anyways, keep going.
Oh.
I don't know about
hold
that.
Hold on. I got it.
Is it a thing where they're just like, it's the same entity just fighting against each other? Is that the take that we're going to land on?
Maybe. We'll find out by the end.
Yeah, so one of the things that we decided to talk about today was we have all these, let's say all the Zionist MAGA influencers are criticizing all the non-Zionist MAGA influencers for being Qatari agents, or whether knowingly or unknowingly. And this has been going on for many months now. I have a clip here from Barry Weiss and Douglas Murray, the great British man, who has been making quite the name for himself as of lately,
mm-hmm.
Talking even back in April, talking about this as a concept.
Even before his book came out.
Or sorry, did I say April?
Yeah.
I meant October.
October.
That's even different. Yeah. Because like when it started coming up in my purview is when I started seeing it was when Tucker interviewed the prime minister of Qatar.
Mm.
Right.
So yeah,
like
that's
where it seemed like it just started blowing up everywhere and
so
everyone was talking about it. Saying it for a while.
Yeah. I thought he did that in response to the criticism, but maybe I misremembered that.
Was it around the time of Daryl Cooper, maybe? Like, I want to say he did this right after he made like some sort of statement that got all the Israel supporters really upset.
That's right.
And then he did this like a week after, and then everybody's like, he's a Qatari agent.
Yeah, right.
And then they started calling people like Candace Owens a Qatari agent, uh-huh. and Dave Smith, and so on and so forth. Like, it just started moving and moving on Twitter. Just like, and you couldn't escape it. It was just everywhere.
Yeah, right.
People saying this stuff. So I've done a bunch of digging into, it's like, what is the credibility behind these things? Because now they're calling people like A.G. Pambandi a Qatari agent.
Yes.
And
is this the new like Russian asset narrative?
That's what it
is. Qatar is the new Russia.
Mm-hmm. Well, and we also have Trump. Trump got the plane from Qatar, and we'll talk about that as well. We talked a little bit about it last episode. I can't remember. I feel like I may have said $400 billion, and I feel like it was actually $400 million. It's one of those things I've been thinking about for days.
Yeah. Keeping you up at night?
$400 million is a lot less than $400 billion.
Quite
but,
true.
But anyways, I have a clip here. This is from October, Barry Weiss and Douglas Murray, just to kind of give an idea of, like, this is what people are saying, right?
Of our greatest universities are willing to have outposts in these countries.
Yeah, and
our
bankers, they were funding Qatar and American
bankers,
universities.
Our sports teams and you will hit someone in this neighborhood
that's
paid up,
what
I don't know, we're not going to say a Qatari agent, but on the Qatari payroll in some way.
Yeah. You spit and you'll find a Qatari agent.
Haktua.
Didn't they see what happened to the chick who spit on Ed Martin? That's probably not a good idea to be just spitting in random directions. You're bound to hit a federal.
Well, if you're
going to
hit
official.
A Qatari, you know, they'll
see. That's right. It doesn't matter at that point. Wild.
Yeah. And then we also have, I have Ben Shapiro here. Talking about, he's kind of, let's say, implying that Tucker is paid by Qatar.
Amazing.
Tucker likes to posit, effectively act as cover for the Iranian regime, because again, if the idea is that you have to let Iran go nuclear rather than striking their nuclear facilities, thus endangering extraordinary elements of importance to the American national security apparatus, ranging again from Saudi and UAE to Israel, the Suez Canal, the Red Sea, and all the rest, the Straits of Hormuz, if that's the idea, Well, you may as well just surrender the Middle East to the Iranians now, which, of course, you know, I don't know what Tucker's feelings are on that. He was interviewing the Emir of Qatar. Qatar is essentially a cutout front for the Iranian regime. And he was treating them with great care, shall we say. President Trump obviously does not follow that same belief system. Neither does the rest of the administration. Thank goodness.
This was said before he got the plane, though, so I don't know. Ben might have a different opinion.
Before the neocon talk in Saudi Arabia, for example. Like, that was wild.
Yeah. Are we going to get into that today?
We did that.
Oh, you did that.
That's the episode you're editing right now.
Yeah. Perfect. The one that didn't upload but actually did. The one that will come out today as of this recording.
Oh, thank you.
That's the plan anyway.
Nice. Yeah. So, and then you also have Attorney General Pam Bondi. Now everybody's like aiming their sights on her because she worked for a group called Ballard Partners, who is really this global group that works with government relations with a bunch of different entities. And so she was registered under FARA.
Which is
for Qatar, right? But she was also registered for like Kuwait and a bunch of other countries too. And she did a bunch of work helping with government relations with Qatar during the World Cup or on the precursor to the World Cup. And so now everybody's looking like, look, she was registered under FARA, Foreign Agents Registry Act.
Oh, and that's specifically because she said that the plane gift is legal.
Yeah.
Right. Because of the contingents, because the bounds on the gift, like the way that they're giving it to us.
Right.
Yeah. And so they're like, oh, it can't be legal. It can't be legal. And there's a case there. Maybe it might not be. But the only reason you're discussing this because you're a Qatari agent, thanks to her background and working as a lobbyist. Now, FARA, you asked what that is. There's a Foreign Agent Registration Act, actually created in 1939 in order to try to expose German investments in propaganda in America for the Nazis.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, this was also the thing, like FARA was when RFK was Attorney General, you know, RFK Jr.'s father. That's how Senior Jr. works.
Very good. Thank you. Thank you.
Glad we're all up to date. We're all up to speed here. He was constantly at odds with a lot of different groups, but primarily Israeli groups who he thought needed to be registered under FARA and would not register under FARA, groups like AIPAC and such, right? So like this kind of, there's an interesting thing where there's a lot of concern in America of a lot of these Israeli entities that are not registering under FARA, but like they probably should be. Like they're clearly doing lobbying efforts specifically for the state of Israel. And it's like, you should register. Like that would make it transparent. We should see where all this money is going. You know, like we should see that stuff.
Right.
But then we're seeing all these instances, like there's all these different groups that Qatar is doing influence campaigns, like all countries are doing influence campaigns on each other. And you have people doing things above BARD, registering through FARA.
Yeah.
And it's just like, well, they're doing it correctly.
Yeah,
that's
right.
The thing.
So the thing with the AIPAC is what's interesting about it is because AIPAC hasn't always been AIPAC. AIPAC was really just the lobbying arm of the American Zionist Council, AZC.
Yeah.
So they themselves, we know, were a direct organization with direct funding from the Israeli government in the 1950s and 60s, right? So the question is like, in 1962, when RFK Sr. Starts to go after them requesting FARA registration, after, of course, Kennedy dies, they then reorganize and basically break off their lobbying arm from AZC and never file for the new lobbying arm, which was AIPAC. So that AIPAC, it severed formal financial ties to Israeli state institutions and presented itself purely as an American domestic lobbying group, not a foreign agent. But what's weird about that is that FARA itself doesn't require you to have direct money either. All it requires is for you to, anyone who's any group that legally lobbies for foreign interests,
which right,
that's it.
American Israeli PAC would certainly fall under.
Well, because Israeli isn't just a stand-in for all Jews everywhere. They're right. Not like the
Israel
NAACP. Now imagine if the NAACP was also like, this is why you should treat Rwanda better because they're also black. Yeah. That would be what we're talking about.
It's exactly kind of like,
once you add in Rwanda, you're now talking about a nation state, and is this a FARA situation? I mean, that's a really reasonable question
for sure.
It's never really been brought in, and there's all like, and it's fundamentally a loophole in the law, right?
Well,
because you don't have to disclose your organization's funding just carte blanche in America, right? And that's actually a really important part of privacy law in America, tracing itself back to NAACP versus Alabama, where the people in the South were going after the funders of very different groups that were advocating for civil rights. But the challenge is, if you're lobbying the government and doing influence campaigns with the government, then you're in a situation where, you know, we have a higher bar standard for all lobbying, and yet AIPAC is like in this loophole. And like, why? Why is that?
Well, and I believe, so like the precursor, the American Zionist Council, I believe they were directly funded by, what is it called? The Jewish Group, which is like a directly like Israeli state funded entity, I believe. Isn't that? I remember doing this research back during the JFK documents stuff, right? Now I'm just kind of like pulling that from my memory.
Right. So it is true that the American Zionist Council got direct funds from the Israeli government. Now, if you're talking about MEGA, that's a different thing. Mm-hmm. Those are dual citizen American Israelis who live in America who are major funders of many causes, which itself doesn't trigger FARA unless what you're doing is advocating for the interest of another country, right? But this is where the weird trick thing that we do, and Ben Shapiro does this all the time, where he conflates American security interests with Israeli interests as if we were the same country. But Israel is not the 51st state. It's a different country.
Canada is.
What's that?
Canada is.
Exactly. True. Neither can be, because they don't have written constitutions, and therefore they're illegal. You can't admit a country that doesn't have a written constitution.
Canada doesn't have a written constitution?
Yes, they do.
Oh, I thought they did.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure they do. Don't they?
Don't they operate under British court law?
They're their own country. I'm pretty sure that.
Oh, okay. Maybe they did.
Pretty sure they have constitution. Yeah, like,
I don't know. You're a Canadian.
You're now making me question.
I know this. Israel doesn't. I'm positive Israel doesn't.
Canadian constitution. Let me look this up now.
It appears it does.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. Yeah, they have a Constitution Act of 1867.
Oh, okay.
Originally, the British North America Act.
Yeah, because like they have their own Independence Day and everything. Like, they're not.
I don't believe you.
If you go to Canada, it's hard to, when you talk to people about it, like, it's hard not to feel like they're just an extension of the UK. But like, they do have an Independence Day that they celebrate. It's on July 1st.
I've really been as Israel. So yeah, we can make Canada the 51st state, but Israel can't.
Well, I say that, and this is total tangent. I'm sorry. We'll go right back to the topic at hand as soon as I get this out. But it does say these documents, along with other statutes, court rulings, and unwritten conventions, form Canada's constitution. However, unlike some countries, Canada's constitution is not a single consolidated document, and unwritten principles like parliamentary sovereignty and the rule of law also play a significant role. So it sounds like it's a body of various different documents, not like something.
It's very amorphous.
That's kind of similar to the UK, actually. Because the UK has
very Canadian
technical documentation, but most of what actually governs the UK is court law.
They just all sort of agree to agree.
Ha-ha!
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Anyway, back to Israel.
Until some of them stop agreeing, which is what's
happening.
It
seems like is where we're at. Yeah.
Yeah. So let me show you one of these Qatari agents in Congress.
He's wearing an IDF uniform.
That's an IDF.
This is a congressman wearing an IDF uniform.
Who is this?
What is his name? I forget his name.
Click on the community notes. It'll tell us.
Proposed community notes.
Well, whoever he is, he's a U.S. congressman wearing an Israeli military uniform.
Yeah. Like, he does this often.
It's kind of like a...
Why?
The same reason that What's-His-Face does it from Ukraine.
Well, it's
Brian Mass, that's his name.
Yeah, that's right. It's sort of like, you know, it's not just Israel. Like, I get very disturbed when we see in Congress, remember everybody waving the Ukrainian flags?
Yeah.
Which I believe is illegal.
It's against the rules.
Yeah, it's like against the rules of Congress, right? Yeah. To wave non-American flags around.
Yeah.
And we had a moment where it was just like almost every single member of Congress was waving Ukrainian flags around.
Yeah. During one of Biden's speeches.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah.
And then there was another instance where, who was it? It was a congressman or a senator. They were talking about some bill, and just in the background, you just have in his office, just this massive Israeli flag in the background. Yeah. And you're just like, what are we doing here? It's like, this is America.
Yeah.
What are you doing?
It's such a strange thing, because we keep observing that this is a phenomena. And yet,
the bill had nothing to do with Israel, too. Like, that was the thing. It was about like food or something.
That's just in his office.
Yeah. It was just there.
Yeah.
And he had that as a prop in the background. And there's like, and it's also like, framing? Like, what are you doing here? Like, yeah. You know this is going to cause a stir.
You think it would be controversial, but it's one of the weird things is it's not, right? It's you'd think it'd be controversial and weird and, you know, more of a big deal that AIPAC doesn't register under FAR, but it isn't, right? And you're always, and this is what fuels all the conspiracy theories around this question, is if we don't ever bring anything to light, if we say you can't talk about that, that would mean that you're an anti-Semite, then you're going to fuel all of that stuff. Because if you cut out a man's tongue, everyone just wonders what he had to say. Right. If it's always just like, you can't talk about that, then that's what people are going to go to.
For sure.
Well, and a lot of this too is stirring. So because, so what kind of people are using to justify a lot of this is everybody's pointing towards this Wall Street Journal article, which goes to, it's back from 2017, where it's a new lobbying effort of Qatar targeting 250 Trump influencers to change U.S. policy. And I had mentioned this a bit on a previous episode, but kind of what's happening there was Qatar was going, they were subject to a blockade from like Saudi Arabia and a bunch of states around there. So what they did was they put in a lobbying effort. They hired a lobbying firm to help with government relations with people that were close to Trump. And it was people like they hit like Mike Huckabee and Corey Lewandowski and
Dershowitz.
Alan Dershowitz was on there, like that Qatari asset.
It's so funny because like, all the names that are listed at the top are all Israel, like Zionist types.
Yes.
Right? Like they're not.
It's not like Tucker Carlson. Like maybe he was on the list. I don't know. But like those aren't the people that are that were like the prominent figureheads being hit by this. And it was like the guy that led the lobbying effort was a former Ted Cruz staffer. It was like his like an aide of his that is now was part of this lobbying group. It was like Stonington Group or something like that. I can't remember what the exact name was. So people are pointing towards that. But it was like it's also one of these things where it was registered under FARA. Like it was transparent. We see all the transactions that were made. Like we know that. Mm-hmm. We can see it.
It's above board. There was nothing shady going on, but, I assume.
So are all the Israeli trips declared under FARA?
Or what trips?
I'm not sure about that. Yeah, because they did bring in Mike Huckabee and Alan Dershowitz for these like conference meetings and things like that. Mm. That was part of it. But I believe those transactions were in there. At least as I was chatting with Grok, it sounded like it was. Like it sounded like it was above board. And it's like I'm not one to defend Alan Dershowitz.
Yeah, you know, but it's like... it is funny how this sort of thing is saying it's changing U.S. policy when Alan Dershowitz has no impact whatsoever on U.S. policy.
But right. it's that he's close to Trump. These people are around Trump so that they can be the person in his ear saying like, hey, Qatar doesn't want to be subject to a blockade from Saudi Arabia. Right. Right.
Alan Dershowitz may not be able to create policy, but he could be influential towards policy. Right.
And that's why they specifically targeted the influencers. Like it was an influencer campaign. Right.
OK. But when we hear influencers, most people are probably thinking, oh, you're talking about the guy on X, right?
Yeah, Ben Shapiro.
Yeah, right. You're thinking of Benny Johnson.
Yeah, and some people personality, like that, right?
Yeah.
But it's not that. These are grass tops elites who are more closely tied to Israel than they are to
I think there was some of that. I don't want to, like, obviously, I'm not going into the whole article here. I don't have it sitting in there.
I looked through it. I found nothing other than Huckabee, Dershowitz. I mean, now it says 250, but it doesn't get into exactly who in this article. So what are we talking about? If everyone's quoting this to use this as the reason why Dave Smith is a Qatari agent, what the hell are we doing here? This is a terrible case.
Well, that's kind of the thing right here. And now we have it kind of throwing more fuel on the fire is the Trump plane gift, right? So Air Force One is the new Air Force One is being built. So Qatar threw in the this gift for him. Well, and it's not directly to him. It's a gift to the Pentagon, which is how Trump is justifying it to go around. There's a constitutional clause called the Emoluments Clause, prohibits presidents from receiving foreign gifts without congressional approval. And so he's saying, well, it's a gift to the Pentagon.
Well, and I heard also that it's eventually going to be given once his term ends, it'll be given to like the Trump Presidential Library Foundation.
Yep.
So it's not going to him. He may be using it, but it's not his.
What's it going to be doing? Flying kids around the world? Like, I don't understand. You take a brand new airplane, just put it in a museum just because?
Give it to a library? Well that's a good question.
It is questionable on whether or not he'll be allowed to use it personally afterwards. And this is part of the agreement is not still set in stone. It's an agreement between the Qatari defense ministry and the Pentagon. They're still working out the negotiations
right.
on this.
And you can see where Trump, just knowing Trump's character, and I don't know what he's said about this so far, but it does seem like this would be a thing that he would fit well with how he thinks about the world. It's like, oh, these people, they're giving me this great gift. It'll save us all taxpayer dollars because, you know, I don't know why, but right, he doesn't want to use Air Force One. It's a really nice airplane, I guess, right? And so now it's an asset of the United States, so we're getting that for free. That's a good deal, right? Yeah. So you could see it from Trump's point of view as just that.
Well, and I believe because I believe Trump in his first term, I believe, set forward the contract for the building of the new Air Force One, and it's still being built, I believe. Because like the current plane is 40 years old, so it's like it's of need of update. Because he would always talk about that on the campaign trail. It's just like under Obama, they were negotiating contracts, and it was like 3x the price of what it should have been, so I brought it down.
Mm. Yeah. Well, and I also heard on X, I saw a video of a member of Congress saying that this deal had actually started under the Biden administration.
Maybe.
I can't corroborate that.
Oh, really?
Other than what this congressman said, but it seems like maybe this was pre-existing
true,
Trump
as
well.
If that's true, then that's...
It's the most classic case. That's what the media does all the time. They make a big deal out of something that probably shouldn't be. Yeah. I mean, if it was negotiated under Biden as a gift to the presidency.
Right.
Rather than to the president.
Well, it's also one of these things where I don't know the reason we're supposed to hate Qatar.
Yeah.
Like I don't really understand it.
Dude, that is
but they're giving money to universities,
so
Kyle.
So does that
Isn't that what
country?
They said? Is that what Murray said? It's so sketchy that they give money to universities. Like, lots of people give money to universities.
So that is
why
my understanding is they are the largest foreign donor to U.S. universities, and one of the primary ones is Cornell University. They've given about $6.25
billion. Damn.
Total.
But they can't afford a little bit for a little podcast. I mean, come on, Qatar.
Come on, guys.
Well, we'll start.
We'll drop our Bitcoin
we'll butter them up here.
Address in the show notes.
Yeah, you can drop in some Bitcoin from the Sovereign Wealth Fund.
All right. So sorry to derail you. So they give a bunch of money to Cornell.
Well, that's like $2 billion of that has gone to Cornell over the last few decades.
Is there any evidence
like a bunch of other
Cornell
things?
Has like become more Islamic as the... As the point of that, like, I don't understand why that's a bad thing.
Yeah, what's the outcome of that?
Well, so like, this is the criticism is like the reason why you have these pro Hamas sympathies among college kids is because Qatari funding is changing academic direction. And it's a question of how free is our academics actually, which is funny because like this is always kind of the conservative argument about like what's been going on with like liberals and college campuses. But
right.
But, you know, so like now it's just all Qatar's doing it, you know.
So how solid is the case there? Is there evidence that there are mandates or strings that are attached to this? I mean, when I was in college, I don't think any of the students knew who was funding the college, right? They didn't.
Or what Qatar was.
Yeah, right.
Seriously.
Like, did you mispronounce Qatar? that seems more likely.
Qatar Hero?
Yeah.
I played that.
Qatar.
Yeah. So, but it's also because, like, there's been these campaigns for us to really hate Qatar. In the past, where when the World Cup was going on in 2022, you guys might remember there was the that journalist that got detained briefly after he got off the plane because he was like being super gay in an Islamic country. Right?
I do remember that.
Yeah,
right?
I remember that. Yeah.
I don't know, like maybe don't go and like be flamboyantly gay and wear all your gay pride stuff when you fly into another country that you know is
that doesn't share
like
those
traditionally
values.
Islamic. Like,
yeah.
I don't know. Like, to me, that's like the diverse take is like you should respect other people's cultures when you go there.
That's a fair diverse take. But,
wrong.
Global wrong. Homo. Everyone tolerate everything equally.
Yeah, because like he came in and he was wearing like gay pride shirts and FIFA. There was also other controversy because FIFA had banned players during this time period from wearing rainbow armbands that said One Love on them. So like this is when like pride shit was going crazy high at this time. So there was a lot of this like, oh, Qatar is super, super anti-gay. We hate Qatar. And like the libs were like, yeah, we should bomb Qatar or something.
I don't know.
With rainbow painted love bombs.
I'm exaggerating, but that was a propaganda campaign that we were subjected to during this time period.
You just see Rachel Maddow signing the bombs, you know?
Yeah, Caitlyn Jenner's out there signing warheads.
It's sort of like that meme where it's like I think it was like conservative president. It's just like bombs dropping. And then it was like liberal president or like Democrat president. And it's like rainbow drums, bombs dropping.
Yeah, I've seen that for sure.
So that happened and got the left to hate him. And of course, there were good criticisms of that. There was some stories about Qatar, which is a country that has about 250,000 people are like actual citizens of Qatar.
Yes, 330,000
and 2 million total residents. So all the difference is foreign workers. Mm. And in constructing of the stuff for the World Cup, all the buildings and location, 6,500 immigrant workers died. Like crazy. Wow. Yeah. So obviously not a perfect country. It got some problems.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is also a common thing whenever the Olympics or the World Cup show up at a place. Mm-hmm. I was telling you guys this before we recorded, but back when both the World Cup and the Olympics were in Brazil, which was like they were very tightly close together. It was like within like a 2-year time period, both of those were there. I remember I have a good friend down in Sao Paulo, and he was always messaging me like, hey, is anyone in America talking about like what's going down on here? I was like, I have no idea what you're talking about. He's just like sending me articles in Portuguese that I'm running through Google Translate. And it was like, there was protests of like 25 million people in Sao Paulo and like 21 million people in Rio de Janeiro, because of all sorts of stuff like government corruption. And we're now seeing like, this is pre Bolsonaro and everything that was going on during that time. But also like where the venue was being held, they would just, they built a wall to block the view to the slums from the venue, like stuff like that.
Sort of like Beijing, like cutting off, automobile traffic for like 2 weeks or a month before the Olympics so that it wasn't smoggy as hell when all the athletes and the press got there.
Or like Gavin Newsom clearing up the streets of San Francisco as, yeah. as President Xi comes in, right? Like right. It's kind of that vibe that's going on. But also just like general political corruption that goes around with it. And also like I believe there was a bunch of people that died in order to make everything ready for the World Cup then in Brazil too. But like similar story. Like, remember, these aren't America. They are still kind of third world countries in a lot of ways. Mm. Although Qatar is quite wealthy for its size.
Yeah, you'd think they'd be able to afford the safety equipment not to have 6,000 people die.
Well, this is why we need government agencies and regulations.
No. Wealth does that.
You think it's just like the heat? Like just working?
I didn't get a clear explanation, but we have the Guardian article linked in there. But it was it seemed to me to be mostly a safety issue.
Get OSHA on the case quick.
Yeah.
Here, let me pull that.
Well, OSHA doesn't make things more safe.
Yeah, they do, David. That's their whole point.
I need to show you the graph. The OSHA graph.
Look at this graph.
Show you the graph. 6,500 migrant workers have died in Qatar since World Cup awarded. Interesting. More than, all these migrant workers from India, Pakistan, Nepal, Bangladesh, and Sri Lanka.
In 2019, it found that Qatar's intense summer heat is likely to be a significant factor in many workers' deaths. The Guardians were finding supported research. Yeah, and a big part of that is probably liability, too. If you're a foreign worker, harder for your family to hold the government accountable.
For sure.
Or the construction company or whatever.
If you're from a really poor country, particularly one in the Himalayas, like Nepal, where you're probably not accustomed to the desert heat at that altitude.
That's my understanding of a lot of these Middle Eastern countries that have been very much on the come up in the last 2 to 3 decades. UAE is another one for that example, where they're like super hyper protective of their citizens and just their citizens. Right? Like that's their concern is like, because we have this sovereign wealth fund and it helps fund your healthcare as a citizen, helps fund your education as a citizen, all this stuff. But it's just like everybody else can come work. It'll be safe streets. It'll be all this stuff. But like, we're not responsible for you in the same
way. Good question.
That's kind of the culture is my understanding.
Why doesn't the U.S. have a sovereign wealth fund?
Well, it has been signed in with an executive order this year under Trump. So.
Right, but why haven't we had one until we're just now kind of getting around to thinking about doing it?
That is an interesting question. That
we run on deficits.
Yeah. I wanted to raise. Yeah, well, there's that.
Well, we have like Social Security, which is effectively like the same concept, but it doesn't achieve market interest
rates. Well, also Congress raided Social Security multiple times and it's never been based upon math that's actually net savings.
Huh.
Yeah. I want to get into that. Maybe we should jump into the what is Qatar?
Before we do, the Qatar government says that the number of deaths, which it does not dispute, is proportional to the size of the migrant workforce and that the figures included white collar workers who have died naturally after living in Qatar for many years. So maybe we're doing a hatchet job.
Oh, maybe
it also says that only 20% of expatriates from the countries in question are employed in construction, and that work-related deaths in the sector accounted for fewer than 10% of fatalities within this group. But that said, it's also a question of like, this is very high in a very tight period of time. And when you got 2 million people, 10% of 2 million is a lot of freaking people. So
is this, yeah. is this kind of like COVID numbers where like a lot of people being under, like being reported as something that, but
they
it was
didn't
actually
die
like
from construction. Yeah. They died with construction. Yeah.
Is that
That's
what's
so
going
on fucked
here?
Up. Distinction.
Is that what's happening here?
yeah. But yeah, it's so so the whole point of that was not to leave you the impression that Qatar is somehow like this terrible place. It's just rather that it's a place with its own set of problems and sociological issues, such as that they have like this huge disparity between men and women. There's like 3 dudes for every girl.
Yeah, because they're bringing in a ton of people to do work that are people that are looking for opportunity because Qatar since the 90s has just been on this massive come up ever since the new leadership took over. And so now you have a lot of people sort of like so many people are fleeing to Dubai and things like that, right? Like these some of these Gulf states are doing exceptionally well, but like you're having young men fleeing to those places for opportunity.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And then it makes it to this, like, I think I saw it was like 70% male.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's, it's gonna be tough to be single in Qatar.
Interesting gender dynamic.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Qatar.
How are you supposed to have a harem in a Middle Eastern country like
72
that?
72 virgins. There's not even that many in the whole country. Just kidding, guys.
Well, yeah, because so this is one of the reasons, like this is one of the things that I'm struggling with and trying to piece together why the propaganda towards Qatar right now, because Qatar is a very important ally for our Middle Eastern policy because like arguably our most important air base is there. The Al Udeid air base.
Udeid?
Yeah. I don't know.
Udeid?
Established in 1996, the largest U.S. air base in the Middle East and houses about 10,000 U.S. personnel. Critical hub for U.S. Central Command. And Qatar also is constantly expanding it and fully funding it. And
can't say that for the EU.
Better partners than the French.
Better partners than anyone in Europe.
And that's why we love that this show is sponsored by Qatar. Anyway,
well, it's just like to me, like I'm sitting here thinking about like the game theory of the propaganda. That like, why is there so much propaganda going here when they're so critical for our like Middle Eastern infrastructure for everything that we do there? I find it strange that they're like a target that we're supposed to be like setting our sights on.
Well, they're Islamic,
and it first letter Q. That's
the whole case.
First letter Q. Conspiracy theorists right off the jump.
Oh yeah. Well, and it's definitely related to Q.
Yes, yeah, definitely.
100%. Well, it's because like they're neighbors to Iran, and some of that is sometimes they're against Iran, sometimes they're with Iran on certain things. But it's like, are they not? They're not 100% against Iran, so. Mm.
So they're
they hate
the
us because of that?
Yes.
Or we're supposed to
we
hate
have
them?
To hate them. Yes.
Yeah. Because like Qatar was against Hezbollah, who Iran was funding, right?
Yeah, but Qatar is Sunni. So they don't have a natural like religious alliance with Iran. The ethnicity actually works the opposite direction.
The big thing is like, so my understanding is the natural gas there that there's like this big section of natural gas and 2/3 of it is in Qatari territory and 1/3 of it is in Iran. Hmm. So they work together on that. But also in that being said, it's like it's actually in the Tucker Carlson interview with the prime minister. He even says this, and I think this is like a very useful way of thinking about diplomacy. He's like, no, there's some things that we're with Iran on and some things we're against Iran on.
Like, almost like an adult.
Yeah.
Like that's dealing with the real world.
No, and he actively said he's like we helped fight against Hezbollah, who Iran was funding. Yeah. But at the same time, we had to have some sort of a partnership because we both share a region that has this natural gas.
Yeah.
So it's like this part of our governments work together while this part of our governments are fighting each other. Mm. And like that's just like how diplomacy works.
Hmm.
Right?
Yeah. So the obviously, if you're in that area, then the fact that they're Shia has to, you know, take second place to the fact that you have to run your boats right next to them.
You have to be friendly and, with the people around you.
Yeah, yeah. Your mining equipment, all that kind of stuff. And you're drawing from a common natural resource. So therefore, you have to have some kind of deal worked out. Otherwise, you're going to go to war. And they really can't afford that, right? America's there, but,
yeah,
you know, the one Kuwait situation going
on. Yeah, they clearly, and it seems to me, and just as, you know, Qatar is a small place, it seems to me that they're very hyper-focused on, like, we want to do whatever we can to create stability and peace within this region. And we are willing to be third-party mediators with anybody on this goal. That seems to be, like, their big, like, they're the third-party mediator state.
Hmm. So they're the Switzerland of the Middle East.
Kinda.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of like...
Might be a way to think about it. Maybe. Just minus the mountains.
Yeah. Well, because this is another thing where one of the big criticisms that I see with there is like their relationship to Hamas, right? And it's like they have an office. They have a Hamas office in Qatar. It's like, ooh,
that must
that's
mean,
scary.
Oh, yeah. That ooh, must mean scary. That they support Hamas.
Yeah. Well, and but what that actually means is the U.S. and Israel asked them to have a diplomatic office for Hamas for the sake of being able to talk to Hamas.
What?
Yeah, like
we asked them to do it. And yeah. Now we're like using that as a reason to hate the country.
Well, people within our country are using that as a reason to hate the country.
Not right? The government.
Like, not we, not the government.
Yeah, exactly. Like the Zionist types, they're looking at that. We did the same thing with the Taliban. We asked Qatar to hold a Taliban office there for us to be able to negotiate with the Taliban.
Seems reasonable. Does seem reasonable.
Seems reasonable. Now, some of the Hamas relationship is that they've been sending money into Gaza for investment and reconstruction efforts since 2012. There was a time period of 2018 to 2021 where there was monthly briefcases of cash of $15 million, just $15 million in briefcases.
Damn.
Going in through Israeli-approved security checks, right? Now the critique is that this money has been redirected to military efforts, but like, it's one of these things where Qatar is helping with the reconstruction efforts in Gaza over the last decade and like helping with like investments and things like that with Israeli approval. And now it's like,
now that's been used to marshal evidence for why anyone who is skeptical of Israeli policy in Gaza is a...
Yeah, like Israel was checking
Qatari.
The briefcase.
The Qataris.
Right? Like,
looks like it's all there. Let it through. Wow.
Like, I was asking Grok, I'm like, am I missing something? And Grok's like, no. Grok was like, no, there's no real direct evidence at all. Like, could it be indirectly? Yeah, for sure. Right? Which it makes sense. Like, money is fungible. It could be redirected into military efforts, right? But like, all of this stuff appears to me that it was all above board from everything I'm seeing. And Grok was like looking at it too and was like, yeah, it seems like it was all above board.
So one of the questions in this is, if you listen to Ben Shapiro and Mark Levin and the folks on this that have been very critical and throwing around the Qatar agent smear, is when they say they've been funding Hamas, so you get this picture in your head of like an underground tunnel from Europe,
yes,
of Egypt, of them like moving guns in.
Yeah.
Not money going to Israel and then Israel putting, you know, literally shepherding it across the border to Hamas, unless you're actually engaging with reality on the whole thing and not just following the narrative. Because we have multiple, you know, sources specifically from like the Jerusalem Post, where Bibi Netanyahu, do you want to bring it up, Kyle? From the Jerusalem Post, the JP article there, where Benjamin Netanyahu asked them to keep this up. Netanyahu, money to Hamas is part of strategy to keep Palestinians divided. Yeah, so the whole goal being is you fund Hamas in Gaza, you can keep them from anyone from moderating in Gaza like they have in the West Bank, and therefore keep the two groups of Palestinians separated.
Right, so you keep an extremist group in power such that you always have an enemy to target because they're always going to try to be targeting you.
Right.
It's sort of like here in America, the right should be trying to continue making the left radicalize themselves and continue steering people away.
The RNC should be funding Kamala Harris speeches across the country.
Well, it's like we saw in Canada, is like they moderated and did very well, right? But yeah, like in America, they're having struggle with that, and they still have this very radical wing, right? Mm-hmm. You know, but like kind of the same type of tactic.
Yeah,
like this is a much more militant tactic, but it's the same thought process, like the same DNA of an argument.
Yeah. I mean, to the point where we have the head of Israeli intelligence actually doing the same thing in the Haaretz article.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And It's thinking about it. Yeah. They don't want you to know. They don't want you to know.
While we're waiting, I was just so obsessed by this. How many briefcases would it take to traffic $15 million?
Did you ask Grok to calculate it?
I did.
Well, how much?
14.
14?
Yeah.
Why not pallets?
Really?
You know,
it seems like smaller than I thought.
Me too. I mean, if you had 10,860 $100 bills, that would be $1 million. So
wow. When do we just start issuing $1,000 bills?
So 15 divided by just over a million is 13.81.
Yes. Wow. So here we do have from Haaretz, Mossad chief visited Doha, urged Qatar to continue Hamas
financial aid.
Haaretz website. I don't know what Haaretz website is doing to me right now, but it's not pretty. Mm. But yeah, to continue Hamas financial aid.
It knows the show is funded by Qatar. So like, get out of here.
Legit spam, buddy.
No.
Performance issue.
Haaretz, what is going on?
Jeez. Yeah, so 2019, Netanyahu was reported to have said in the Likud party meeting, quote, and this was reported many places, right? Jerusalem Post being one of them. Anyone who wants to thwart the establishment of a Palestinian state has to support bolstering Hamas and transferring money to Hamas. This is part of our strategy to isolate the Palestinians in Gaza from the Palestinians in the West Bank. So from the beginning, this happened, and we've been talking about since right after October 7th. One of the challenges to this, and it's the typical hubris of security states and the apparatus of the state, is that we can just control everything with the right amount of effort. And this oversight of, you know, where that money was going, what it was being used for, you know, was apparently probably being used to build tunnels and rockets and all the capabilities that Hamas has been able to build. So to what degree, the question then is, if Israel is in the position where they are focusing on this for another strategic goal, to what degree do they own the unintended consequences of that strategic goal? Maybe if they had just let Hamas, you know, become poor and there'd be new demand for new political leadership that maybe is more moderate, it would have been a problem for them with the West Bank Palestinians being able to identify with Gazans, but it wouldn't be the same problem that they're having with Hamas. So this is where the conspiracy theory comes in, right? That the conspiracy is that the intent was to create as radical and as empowered Hamas as possible so that they would have the excuse to go in and wipe out as many Palestinians as needed, so that they could create a single state solution, because Likud will not tolerate a multi-state solution.
That's crazy to me.
Yeah.
There's also other players in the region too, like Grok specifically. I'm just quoting straight from what Grok told me when I was having a conversation with it. Israel seeks to pressure Qatar to curb Hamas's activities, while Saudi Arabia and the UAE aim to undermine Qatar's regional influence, reviving blockade era accusations. It's like, it's also, they just, it's not like, like Qatar's competitive with the UAE and Saudi Arabia too. So it's like not just Israel in this. There's other reasons for propaganda to happen. It's not as it's probably in all of the above for this year. Actually, I have a clip from Tucker Carlson when he interviewed the prime minister of Qatar, and I thought it was kind of interesting him talking about his relationship with Iran. And because this is always, is that Ben Shapiro said in that clip, Qatar is just a carve out of Iran. That's all he is. That's all they are. So here is that interview. We should have worn turbans today.
Wrong culture, but that's okay.
You're right.
Yeah.
Yes.
Cultural misappropriation.
So how would you describe your relationship with Iran? And why do you think you're being criticized for it?
Look, it's... you know, Iran has a lot of problems with the West. We understand that. We acknowledge that. They have problems with the region, with countries in the region, yes. At the end of the day, Iran is, you know, our next door neighbor. And we have to maintain a good relation with all our neighbors. We have a lot of things in common when it comes to the gas field, the largest gas field in the world. It's partnership between us and Iran. It's half, two-thirds of it in the Qatari territory, and one-third is in the Iranian territory.
This is in the Gulf. This is undersea.
Yeah, this is the one in the Gulf Sea. you have, I have to coordinate on environmental issues, like, for example, the water contaminations. I have to coordinate on security issues, like smuggling. I have to have this relationship, this working relationship with Iran. But also, when you think about it from a bigger perspective, it's for the interest of the region to have a better relation for everyone in the region with Iran. And you have seen that there is a huge progress in the relationship with Iran and the GCC, between Iran and the GCC in the last few years.
Yeah, that kind of gives you the point. Mm-hmm. It's like, it's reasonable.
Pretty pragmatic. Yeah, just like, yeah. We need to keep the peace, and we have things we got to work on together, and it makes sense for us to be friendly.
It's like, right. We have things that we're going to argue with Mexico and Canada over. We are currently doing that often, yeah. Often, right?
Right.
But like,
while we also
have
coordinate
to,
with them.
We also have to have like a working relationship with them.
Yeah, right. But Iran is bad.
And that's what it comes down right. to is Iran bad. Yeah. There
yeah.
it is.
Yeah.
How dare you bad. Work with?
I'm just tired of being told who to hate.
Yeah.
You know, like, oh, just stop.
That's
that.
The vibe. Yes.
Yeah.
I'm tired of it because they're consistently wrong about it.
Yeah.
Right.
Exactly. Well, and it's just a purely not nuanced view of the world mm-hmm. at all. When it's like, it's binary. It's one versus zero. And it's weird for, you know, particularly the left, who are very into the non-binary thing these days, to try to really extract this binary situation when it comes to foreign policy in these ways. Yeah.
Well, the thing is, you say the left, but it's like...
I mean, I know it's more than that.
But it's not even really... Do the left matter anymore? I feel like I don't see anything from the left anymore. Like, everything is just like right-on-right violence, and the left is like non-existent.
That's because
right?
the vibe shift, right?
Yeah, it's
right.
like the left just doesn't mean anything anymore.
Well, David Hogg got kicked out of the DNC, so there's yeah, something about that, yeah.
Yeah, well, I don't know. That was not their... They weren't sending their best, David. I'll just say that.
But, I mean, this whole, the neocon narrative, right? And if you go back to, like, the war in the Middle East when it comes to Iraq and, you know, Iraq II, really, it's been long, like, this, like, meme, you know, this low-resolution meme culture era where they're the bad guys because they're the strange people who are attacking us overseas. Never mind that the people on 9/11 were Saudis. On behalf of a group that was basing itself out of Afghanistan, right? And like this picture of we have to deal with facts, it's like a low information environment sort of story that just breaks apart once you get to a higher information environment. You're right. Actually trying to negotiate the truth when you have things that can, you know, translate, you know, Arabic into English easily. So once you're dealing with reality, all of a sudden, oh, wow, the world is complex and nuanced and different than... You know, Qatar equals bad because Qatar funds Hamas. You know,
yeah.
like that simple narrative. It just comes apart at any amount of scrutiny.
There's a war on nuance that exists where it's just like things are a little bit more complicated and more complex than just than binaries. Like maybe you should be a little non-binary.
Yeah.
You know,
I think we're embracing non-binary.
Maybe the left is
on
this
show, right?
Are we woke now?
I think we might be woke.
This is the woke, right?
That's why we're woke. We're embracing non-binary arguments on foreign policy. Wow.
Joe, you had mentioned why don't we have a sovereign wealth fund? And I actually used us talking about Qatar to do a little digging into their sovereign wealth fund and what that might mean, because Trump did sign in an executive order trying to establish a sovereign wealth fund. Nothing's really happened there yet. It's just kind of like, this is the thing we're going to do, you know? Mm-hmm. But I thought people might be interested in understanding on how the Qatari sovereign wealth fund works. Mm-hmm. And then we can translate that to like, what could that mean in America if this thing gets up and running? So this is the thing that will make a libertarian squeal. State owned.
Right.
State-owned investment fund managing that manages the surplus wealth of the country. So in Qatar's situation, it's a lot of LNG exports. But they have a central authority called the QIA, Qatar Investment Authority, which was established in 2005, and it manages currently about $526 billion worth of assets.
Wow.
You know, they have 330,000 citizens, so it's kind of like $1.6 million per citizen, kind of, sort of, not really, but like, you know, it's indirectly kind of theirs in a sense, sort of, maybe.
Right. Instead of us owning like however many millions of dollars or hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of our national debt, they sort of, kind of, sort of own assets yeah. in their country.
But like, if you think about it, for how big their citizenship is, like how big their population is, like that's a lot of money yeah. per citizen. If you were to like yeah. calculate it out, like I think it helps put it into a frame of reference. But what that does is, citizens in Qatar, zero income tax. They have free healthcare. They have free education, housing subsidies. Profits go towards various infrastructure development projects. And then there's like job creation that comes from state-backed projects, right? Hmm. So this would be the argument for using this. And, you know, they get surplus every year, like from their industry. And as they have continually growing industry, and then they also diversify their portfolio globally, which is where some of the donation structure, like they have the Qatari Foundation, I think is what it's called, which takes some money from the Sovereign Wealth Fund, which is used for kind of their soft power, right? Like this is sort of like their USAID in a sense.
Yeah.
Where this is where the funding for Cornell University comes from and stuff like that. But then they also invest in projects, which yeah. I believe there was a big announcement. I don't remember what the money was, but there was some sort of like a certain amount of money that just came in from Qatar as part of Trump's whole Middle Eastern trip right now. I know UAE just did a ton of money. Like, I think they promised like $1 trillion or something.
Yeah. Saudi Arabia was like 600 billion.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's kind of what they use that sovereign wealth fund. And then they generate revenue off of that. So it's constantly
right.
growing.
Right.
Right. And then that can be used for helping the citizenry for like their welfare programs are funded by this thing. Right.
Yeah.
Unlike our welfare programs, which are kind of just like our current tax base that goes into that.
Yeah. yeah. Right. With the pyramid like scheme, right.
Yeah.
This is actually coming out of an asset. Better structure, probably. It does suggest the Hoppian theory, to kind of turn the whole libertarian analysis on its head, that when you have an emir or a king or a monarch or someone who actually like
yeah.
has a stake in the future of the country, you might get better policy in the sense of even if it's a welfare policy, the welfare policy isn't going to be based upon extracting out of one group and giving it to another group. It might be based upon assets with actual value.
It is based off of like profit generation and things like that.
Yeah.
That, like that stuff matters as yeah. there is a much more, it feels like, and I would have to go into the nuts and bolts and actually like go in and study how all their stuff works. But it feels like from the outside, it feels like their systems are just run way more efficiently than ours. Just
that's
more,
I've right? heard that criticism before, you know, and they of course have their problems. Right.
Yeah.
But it does not mean and obviously doesn't mean that I'm an advocate for monarchy. But what it does suggest is that you have to be very
but
careful about the perverse incentives of each other. Right. Because the problem with monarchy is that the next guy might not be as good. Mm-hmm. Right. And that guy gets appointed regardless of merit. Right. Blood is not merit. Sorry, white nationalists, but it's not true.
Whereas with democracy, you can almost ensure that the next guy is going to be worse.
Yeah.
Well,
hence Biden to Obama, you know, Obama Biden, right?
Right,
you know,
exactly.
The next guy is always picked out to not overshadow the first guy.
Yeah.
Well, it is interesting, too, because just when I think about these three Gulf state countries, UAE, Saudi Arabia, and Qatar, a lot of them are much more in the recent decades, have much new leadership that are then building up their countries with like quite a bit of big ambition. Cause I believe the current Qatari government is based off of like a coup that happened in the '90s.
Hmm.
And that it was a bloodless coup of his father. Like it was something like that.
Yeah.
And after he took over, it's just Qatar through
yeah.
the roof.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like stocks go up.
Also the natural gas revolution right. helped a lot. Right.
Helps
Which is
that,
what's
right?
interesting about Qatar is that unlike Saudi Arabia, they're not really making it off of petroleum. They're making a lot of their money off of natural gas. Mm-hmm. And the natural gas revolution was, you know, in the 1990s, we basically started leveraging natural gas as another alternative fuel source. And that really scaled across the globe in a lot of ways that are more efficient than coal. So, and more transportable, you know, more abundant in more areas, especially across South Asia. So one of the interesting things is as America's come up with our natural gas, you know, fracking revolution, that has changed a lot of our incentives, but we still work really closely with Qatar for all the reasons that pre-exist in the 90s. But ultimately, it's all the British's fault. Because why is
Most
Qatar there?
Usually are.
Why is Qatar there?
Sykes-Picot.
Qatar. Yeah, right.
Yes.
Basically, the British mandate of the time separated them for tribal reasons, but also for geostrategic reasons. Specifically to have like a state that, you know, bridge between Saudi Arabia and Iran. So,
well, yeah. Some of this then raises the question of like, so what would a sovereign wealth fund look like in our country? Because right now one, it's like who has oversight of it. And from my understanding, it looks like it would be Treasury and Commerce Secretary. So like in the current form, that would be Bessent and Lutnick. But then it's also supposed to have quite a bit of influence from the Department of Energy and from the Interior. And this has been a big focus on the economic side of the Trump administration is monetizing our assets, like understanding what is the worth of all of our public land? What is the worth of all our minerals that are currently in the ground that we are going to begin trying to dig up? All that stuff, all of these things are for the talks. And Doug Burgum kind of talked about this in his interview with the All In podcast, is a big part of his role right now is actually just like, he has just like a team that's just like quantify everything. What do we own? Like how rich is America's balance sheet actually right now?
Right.
Because we have no idea. we don't know how, like what our assets are right now.
So,
right?
But I don't, just like the supposed assets that sit in Social Security, I don't want Congress to have access to greater amounts of money to spend.
No, right.
It's already too big.
Well, this money goes under the sovereign wealth fund outside of Congress. Like this becomes an executive branch tool.
That's my understanding of what they're trying to do with appropriations, right? Your appropriations are from Congress, right? You can't claim title on American energy resources without an act of Congress.
I don't know how it's all going to end up working. Okay. That's one of the reasons why I'm questioning. One of the things right now that I'm looking at this, I'm like, I get how it works under a kingdom.
Yeah.
Like I get that. And I'm looking at it and I'm like, the bottleneck of these problems of like how, okay, so, and then we're just gonna have new treasury secretaries and things like that working like on a 4-year basis. We're gonna be having this rotation that happens right here. Like that's the thing that I'm concerned with a lot of the Trumpian policies on the economic side with trade, with sovereign wealth fund and things like that is like, I see the vision and I can be bought into the vision. But I'm like, I'm worried about the turnover and how that relates.
What happens under the next administration?
And it's also a vulnerability, even if Congress isn't the barrier, right? Another president comes in or whatever.
Exactly.
Or if you're a monarch and the next person comes along, who's, you know, if Donald Trump Jr. becomes president, same problem, right? You don't know what he's going to do, right? And you're just giving more assets and power to the worst institution in your society.
Yeah, but it's also one of these things that if this is something that can be a tool that gets used to be able to chip at the debt. And we have like surpluses and profit generation coming from these devices. Like I'm all ears for listening to how that could work.
Yeah.
That's what I'm open to.
Yeah. The challenge is just like the debt exists because of the spending problem, not because of our lack of ability to claim value out of our resources to better leverage for debt. Mm-hmm. Right. Because we're the lender of last resort for the world, with the world reserve currency, that therefore we can run these deficits, right? They don't, Qatar doesn't have to do that, where they have to have a sovereign wealth fund if they want to run deficits, because then they can claim and leverage assets against, you know, borrowing. Mm-hmm. But we don't have to do that. We do that with promises, you know, and thumbs ups.
But that obviously only works for so long. So is our own form of sovereign wealth fund a way of kind of working our way out of the massive debt situation that we find ourselves in?
I don't know if you can do that. Because you have to leverage out of the whole trap of being the world reserve currency, right? Demand for dollars goes down once you do that, and then you have a problem of interest rates and how to actually pay on your debt.
Well, and this is kind of what I've talked about in previous episodes, is there are a bunch of new ways that we're looking at for selling off or like auctioning treasury bonds and exporting more of those out to the world, mm-hmm. and also taking back the liquidity that the euro dollar has been sucking out mm-hmm. of the system.
Right.
So there that because we are seeing, because that's another aspect, is David Sachs, the crypto and AI czar, is another person that's a big person on the dialogue around the sovereign wealth fund, which is the crypto side of things. Mm. And when we see the stablecoin regulations come through in the coming months, both the stable and the Genius Act, that's another big avenue. And that's the first stuff for the executive order, that's what's been entered into the sovereign wealth fund, is like this Bitcoin strategic reserve, right? And mm-hmm. some of the other crypto that was owned as assets in this time too, right?
Right, and I can see if the government already owns an asset, being able mm-hmm. to leverage that for better balancing its balance sheets, whatever. But it's just like, it's where you're taxing Americans more to move again to a savings account when we already have a massive deficit problem. Right. And like for example, think about it. You're $100,000 in debt and you're like, now's the time to start saving. That's not how I would approach it. Mine would be like, now's the time to pay on your debts, right? Pay yes. down your debts. And then once you are, you know, balance neutral, especially if you're running an annual budget deficit, then you could take your surplus and move it into that so that you can sure. better account. I'm open to those things.
Well, like, that this makes is, sense. We have Lutnick. Lutnick's the one that's like really pushing the zero income tax vision right now too, right? Mm-hmm. So
meanwhile, Congress failed this week mm-hmm. to do rescission again.
Yeah. Like
again, the problem on the DOGE see, savings.
See,
you know?
See, the problem here is Congress.
Like, take it easy. And this is my Curtis point. Yarvin.
This like, is my like, point. Like, the Trump team has all these plans, but yeah. Congress is the problem.
This,
right?
this is where you just got that specter of Curtis Yarvin, like right over your shoulder. You're like,
kind of has a point.
You're making a great point. Like, you know, like
Papa had a point.
When every step yeah. of the way you come around to it, like, well, but Congress refuses to take the budget deficit seriously. And then honestly, you're like, I kind of get it.
That was my point about with democracy, you can be sure the next guy's going to be worse. I mean, generally speaking, the people are always going to be voting themselves more largesse, and Congress is beholden to that mechanism to keep themselves in power from lobbyists, from, you know, small donors, whatever. And so yeah. like here we find ourselves like not wanting to like Curtis Yarvin's argument, but like I kind of do.
I'm probably the most like willing to entertain his arguments at the table,
probably,
right?
Probably yeah. true.
Well, it's, wait, so are we at a Qatari-sponsored podcast endorsing a Trump third term? Is that what we're doing here? And putting more power into the hands of the executive? Is
I
that
think
what we're
you
doing?
Are. I'm not sure I'm comfortable with that.
I think Kyle is the pro-imperialist here. So if you want to make that claim, go for it.
He's sitting on the monarchist fence again.
Well, I'm just looking at it. Like, I was thinking about this the other day where, like, I was thinking back to the fall of the Roman Republic and Julius Caesar's run-through. And I was sitting and I was thinking the other day about the relationship between Julius Caesar and Cato. And they both were like fighting the same people. But Cato was sitting there like, no, we got to do it appropriately and we got to do the thing. And then like you had Julius Caesar come in and he's just like, no, I'm just going to do it. Like, that's kind of the dynamic that happened at play there. And then Cato killed himself. And I'm not sure that was the appropriate role that he should have taken. He could have came and joined and been the autistic bean counter for Julius if he so desired. Right. But like, that's kind of how I see it right now, where I'm like, you have like the MAGA movement that has like all these like ideas that are going through. And then you have all these people like, but the procedure and stuff, and everything's getting so locked down in the procedure that it's just like, we're just going to stagnate for forever yeah. until it's too late.
The challenge is whether or not you can marshal enough popular, you know, push to reform the government, right? So we really live, and I think this is one of Curtis Yarvin's best diagnoses. We really live in FDR's government. When
yeah.
the people of America elected super majorities in the House, Senate, and then FDR's president repeatedly over and over and over again, that's what allowed them to reform it using the rules. The challenge is right now we cannot get there for whatever reason. That might be because there isn't that much support for this agenda. That could be true. You know, I'm
people don't want to do away with their goodies and things like that. Well, too. Like, but also, like all the congressmen have their stuff.
But also, if you get rid of all American institutions, are you being American? Right. Kind of an important American institution is not having a monarch. Right. Right. We kind of left that a bit ago. And, you know, even in the case of FDR, when he left, we're like, okay, we can't do that shit again. But does that destine us to his government forever? Right. That's the opposite challenge. And I understand that's a heck of a problem. That's a Gordian knot. But I also think that, like, look, if you're deporting people as somebody and you're not going through due process sufficiently, that there is a case for a court to step in and say, like, hey, wait, due process is kind of important. I really criticized Bush when he suspended habeas corpus in response to 9/11, mm-hmm. because that's for Americans, right? And all people resident in the United States. So what are we doing? You know, like, and if Bush and if Trump does that for immigrants, I'm not a fan. I refuse to, because habeas corpus is part of our tradition. It's a really important part of our tradition. It's an ancient tradition. Are we still us if we give it up? Like, it's a classic comic book villain problem, right? You fight the monsters right up until the point where you become the monster. Mm-hmm. All right, are we becoming the monster by compromising something about who we are in order to accomplish the goal?
That's a great question, and I think one to pose to the audience. What do you guys think? Are we becoming the monster?
Should we become more like Qatar?
Wait, now you're just falling for their propaganda. Qatar's the monster.
Oh my God, Qatar is the monster.
It all comes circular.
Monster sponsor of this podcast, maybe.
Yeah, I think it's just like there's certain things I think that can be learned from that, and it's just like, people getting too blockaded by procedure. Like, procedure doesn't mean that you have to, like, doing away with certain procedure doesn't mean that you have to lose your humanity. Like, I feel like that's a leap that's being made there, where I'm like, to me, it's just like, I think I would like the idea of a sovereign wealth fund, and I feel like Congress would get in the way. And I have quite, and we've never had a sovereign wealth fund, so we don't really have any like actual rules on that. So like everybody would be like, oh, the power of the purse, blah, 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 like appropriations, blah, blah, blah. So like it'll go in there and you're just like, yeah, but does it have to be that way? I don't know. Does it have to be that way? Like, that's all I'm saying.
Yeah, yeah,
and
yeah.
And that's
yeah,
the only question I'm raising, right? Like, and sure. I don't think that's a monstrous question to ask. I know just asking questions can be quite monstrous these days.
I'm not claiming that. I'm not claiming you're being a monster. To be clear, I want to make sure that's clear, because I'm not trying to fight with you, Kyle. I'm just trying to say you want to be careful in your pursuit of your aim so you don't itself undermine the thing that is your identity, right? Because you can lose that when you become so obsessed with the outcome. Your method of getting to the outcome is important.
Yeah.
Yeah, and just sometimes a lot of the things that are in the way, the blockades, end up being exactly what's used by your enemies to keep you trapped. And so if you're constantly playing within their game, that's where the problem ends up lying.
Yeah,
right.
The challenge being the game is an American one, mm-hmm. is the one that's actually in our institutions.
Yes, because following institutions, that's the American way.
Well, wait a minute. What is our culture if it isn't in our institutions somewhat? I mean, I'm not even an institutions guy. I'm just saying it's something.
I think we may need to carry on this conversation in the skiff, because we have gone a little over time. We appreciate you sticking with us, guys. But great conversation, fellas. We appreciate it very much.
Are we Qatari assets?
Are we Qatari assets?
You decide.
Answer in the comments. Let us know. And if you're down with that, join the Discord. And make sure to smash the like button if you're on Spotify or Apple. Please do make sure that you give us a follow, leave us a review. Thanks again to our guy, JRC, for this awesome light box with our logo.
Straight from Qatar.
Straight from Qatar.
Sorry to dox you, buddy.
And thank you for watching. For David Rand, happy 40th.
Thank you, sir.
For Kyle Mack, for Bennett, who's in Arizona, I'm Joe Sheehan. We'll see you in the next one, guys. Peace. Thanks for tuning in to Human Reaction. Please be sure to like, follow, subscribe, and give us a review on your podcast platform of choice. And if you want to become a member and support the show financially, check out humanreactionpod.com. And remember,
happy birthday, David, from your favorite Canadian.